Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Cheryl Strayed is the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Wild, Tiny Beautiful Things, and the novel Torch. Wild was chosen by Oprah Winfrey as her first selection for Oprah's Book Club 2.0, an option for film by Reese Witherspoon's production company Pacific Standard. At 22, Cheryl Strayed thought she had lost everything. In the wake of her mother's death, her family scattered, and her own marriage soon destroyed, 4 years later, with nothing more to lose, she made the most impulsive decision of her life. With no experience or training, she would hike more than 1,000 miles of the Pacific Crest Trail, and she would do it alone. That experience became the book Wild, and it's a pleasure to welcome Cheryl Strayed to The Book Show.
Thanks. It's wonderful to be here.
I am so enamored by your story and what has happened for you as a writer. And before we talk about that, at what point in your life did you know that this was something that you aspired to be?
When I first learned how to read and write, very early on, I was maybe 6 or 7, and I felt pierced by the beauty that words could make. And I knew in some intuitive and internal way that I wanted to be a person who made that kind of beauty. But it took me some years to understand what that meant, how I could become a writer. It wasn't until I was 18 or 19 and I was off at college that I first met people who were writers, my professors of the creative writing and English literature classes I was taking. And so I got a glimpse then into the idea that this could be something that I could actually do. And so from that point on, I took myself very seriously, which in some ways I think back to those early days. And, you know, it's a little comical. I can laugh at myself because, of course, I had so much to learn. But the way I became a writer is deciding to not be joking around about it. It wasn't just something I always thought I wanted to do. It was something I did from very early on.
It seems as though, even though your great success has come in writing a memoir, that the original goal was to get the novel out of you.
Well, the original goal, which is still my goal, is to spend my life writing books. And I never imagined when, you know, in my 20s, I really thought of myself as a fiction writer. And then that morphed into thinking of myself as a writer of both fiction and creative nonfiction, memoir, essays as well. And so to me, it's not so much the form. It's that I keep writing. And one of the things I just love about writing is you never know what's next. People always say, well, what are you writing next? And I always say a book. And who knows what that book will be? A book teaches you what it will be.
When you came to this story of writing about your time on the Pacific Crest Trail, it was something that happened in 1995, and it percolated a long time before it comes out as the memoir. And I'm curious, at what point did you think this could be something?
It wasn't until I was writing it. In 2008, I began to write what became Wild. I thought it was going to be an essay. I always think that anything can be something. Our conversation can be something. I could go home and write a short story in which a writer is being interviewed by a radio show host, and it could become something. So I always think everything I experience may be found in my work someday. So it wasn't that I thought I'll never write about the trail, but I didn't feel a sense of urgency the way I did, as you mentioned, with my first book, my novel, Torch. That story about a family in deep grief felt like it had to come out of me. It was the thing I had to do as a writer. And with Wild, it was more of a sense of exploration. What do I have to say about this experience? As you mentioned, I took the hike in 1995. I began writing this story in 2008. And I think that the book is not only better for it, but possible because of it. And by it, I mean that time that passed. The point of Wild is not, look at me, I took this big hike, and here's what happened. Though what happened on that hike is one piece of the storyline. But what does it mean? What does that experience mean? How was it made manifest in my life? How do I express something bigger about the human condition that transcends my own individual experience. And it wasn't until some time had passed, until I'd apprenticed myself to the writer's craft, until I'd grown up, until I'd let that experience live in my life for some time, that I could write about it.
Some of my favorite parts of the book are when you contextualize and you see where you were there and where you are now, and it allows you to understand that growth.
Thank you. You know, I think that, you know, one of the things I did in Wild is I wanted you to read it, feel as if you're vividly with this 26-year-old, the 26-year-old me who took that hike. But every word is imbued with the consciousness of the 40-year-old me. I began writing the book when I was 39. So, you know, this is a woman in middle age, approaching middle age, looking back on her youth. And I didn't, you know, the book isn't full of, well, what I know now or looking back now. I take all of that phraseology out of it. But the sense or the consciousness of the prose is that of somebody who has come to grips and who has come to understand this experience.
There is the story, of course, and then there is the craft of writing and telling that story and how you play with time and go back and tell us about an event that happened when you were six and then bring us to that point is very effective and certainly, I think, what gives it the literary heft, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Once I figured that out, I mean, any of your listeners who are writers will be nodding their heads when I say structure is such an important piece of any book. And when you figure out how you're going to tell a story, that's sort of, you're halfway there. And with Wild, I knew pretty quickly that, you know, of course, the story of the hike, it just made sense to tell it chronologically. There's no better way to tell a story of a journey, a physical journey, than to begin at the beginning and lead the reader through to the end. But what that story of what came before, you know, the experiences I had in my life that essentially brought me out to that trail and compelled me to go on that hike, I felt pretty clearly they did not need to be told chronologically. We do not experience memory in chronological order. The things that haunt us or comfort us from our past do not come into our minds, you know, in any sort of order. And so I wanted to convey that sense in Wild of how memory worked for me on my hike. That there would be some days that I would be walking along. You know, I was alone. I was so alone out there. And so there was a lot of time to think. And there would be some days that I would be back to a time when I was eight and I would be remembering that era of my life. And then other days, my earliest memories. And other days, I'd be thinking about something that happened 6 months before. And so the backstory in Wild comes at you in that kind of very intuitive tumble.
David McCullough once told me that it's not so much that he's writing a book, that most of the time he's thinking about the book. Uh-huh. And that process for you of being out on the trail and being alone and thinking, how much observation was there as well as to what was going on besides just surviving?
Well, everything. I think that most writers pay attention. I think it's a quality, a sort of innate quality of most people who end up being writers or probably artists of any sort. I have always paid attention in particular to humans, to the ways that we act and the things that we say and the things we conceal and reveal. That's always been a great focus of mine, even when I was a kid. I always wanted to know not who you were, but who were you really? And that's been my great mission as a writer. And I think part of that too comes with, you know, not just observing, for example, the landscape, but noting how it feels to be in that landscape. You know, what does that landscape evoke? What does it call up? And so to be able, that's what you have to do when you're writing, whether it be fiction or nonfiction. You have to create this whole world on the page. And everything in that world should be something that contributes to your cause and that makes the readers feel that world more vividly. So when I was hiking, I think I was naturally observing things. And of course, when I was writing Wild, I went back to that place and, you know, I did a whole bunch of different things, you know, called on my memory, consulted my journals, did some research, sometimes went on to, you know, Google Earth or Google Maps where I could actually see, well, what are the trees growing, you know, along that particular stretch of trail? Because I think that's really important that a writer conjure the entire world for the reader.
The fact that with the trail, there is a beginning, a middle, and an end, obviously gives you an inherent structure right there. But having done that, does that have an effect or did it change your view of writing? Because A, you know that there's always a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that, well, if you can get through that, you can certainly get through this particular writing project.
I will say that it was sure nice to be able to hang wild on the spine of that hike. There was always a sense of forward momentum. And I'm the kind of writer and also the kind of reader who can, I think, sometimes forget how important plot is. You know, the what happened trajectory of the story. I tend to be somebody, I mean, I'm very happy to just read a whole novel, you know, with these two characters sitting in a room talking to each other. I can get lost in the internal sometimes. And so to have this wonderful trajectory that every day I was literally moving forward in space and time, and to have that be, I guess, the cohering force around which this book was formed was really helpful to me. And I think, you know, with every book I write, I learn something new. I learned something with Torch, which led me to Wild. I learned something with Wild, which led me to Tiny Beautiful Things, my collection of the Dear Sugar columns. And so I think I'll never forget that wonderful momentum that Wild had internally. And probably it will come in handy in my future books.
Cheryl Strait is our guest. The new book in paperback is Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail. I think it's important to note a lot has been made that this book became a mega bestseller after Oprah picked it as the restart up to her book club, Oprah 2.0. And that is great. But the book, when it came out, you immediately went to the bestseller list. And my question is, do you have a sense even now of what it is that has resonated with people to wow that?
Well, I do now because they've told me. At this point, I've talked to so many readers and received so many emails. And what's just so fascinating to me is my experience of the book, and I think any writer's experience of any book, is it is such a personal thing. Even when it's fiction, there you are alone with those pages and alone with the story that you've created in fiction, you know, out of your imagination, and in nonfiction, you know, called upon what actually happened. And you've told this story, which ultimately feels like a small story because it's yours. And what has happened with Wild is so many readers recognize themselves in the book. And by that, I mean, they come to me and say, I lost somebody too. I lost a mother or a brother or a child or any number of essential people in their lives. So they're connecting with that grief story. Or they went on a journey in their youth, whether that be a backpacking trip or, you know, a bicycle trip or a trip around Europe, whatever it is. They say, I went through that kind of rite of passage journey as well. Or I'm going to, you know, I'm 60 and my life has come to a place where I'm in transition and I'm going to go on that journey. Or I was married young and divorced, or I got tangled up with drugs, and any number of the strands that are present in Wild, I realized really did do that thing that one hopes one's book will do and transcends the individual life and reaches for the universal story. And so that has been, I guess that has to be my theory, is that when people recognize themselves in literature, they take that book into their lives and into their hearts, and then they go off and tell their friends to read it too. And so that just feels like such a great blessing and such a surprise and such a delight. It is surprising. You know, I don't mean that disingenuously. Of course, I strive for that. The whole point of writing is to connect, really. You know, I have to do this thing so that I can connect with others through words. But it's still surprising. It's a wonderful gift.
Was there a pride upon the completion of Wild, where you said to yourself, "Okay, this is some of my finest work"? It doesn't guarantee commercial success by any stretch of the imagination, but was there a pride at the end of, "Okay, this is, I gave this all I could give it"?
Yes, each of the days that I finished each of my three books are unforgettable days in my life. And they're almost sacred. They're up there with, you know, my wedding day or the births of my two children. Those 3 days where I finished Torch and Wild and Tiny Beautiful Things, I remember them as days of almost pure joy, pure ecstasy, and a deep sense that I had done the best I could. And which is different than saying I've written a masterpiece or I've written something everyone's going to love. That I had no idea about, and it's not up to me. I've really tried to disconnect myself, essentially, from trying to guess that or predict that or even in some ways hope for that. You know, to me, success is, can I say yes to this question? Did I do the best I could do? And in each case, with each of those books, I gave it everything. And when I finished it, when I came to the end, I felt this tremendous joy and gratitude that I had the opportunity to do it.
So much to me, obviously, you write about grief, and there is the journey that you take on the trail. But there is also, you also write about, and it isn't overt, but you do write about class. You grew up poor. You grew up without having much at all. And the way that colors the story, and especially considering the relationship with nature, is really striking and rare.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a really important piece of the story, and because it's an important part of my life. That is how I grew up. I grew up with a single mom for a big part of my life, and then my mother married my stepfather, and we had a very happy family, and we had a family that was always struggling financially. And what that meant really is I didn't get a lot of the things that I wanted, lessons and summer camps and any of those privileges of the sort of middle class child. And I felt in some ways that I'd been denied something. And so when I went off to college, I almost had a chip on my shoulder about, you know, my peers who had those things. But as I grew into my life and really in my experience on the PCT that I, you know, wrote about in Wild, is, you know, what I learned is growing up poor, growing up the way I did in that hardscrabble way, I learned how to be a survivor, and I learned how to make do, and I learned how to not let money give me permission to do things. I didn't need a tremendous cushion to move forward with my intentions. And I think that in so many ways, it was growing up poor that allowed me to see that. Seeing my mother stretch a dollar in so many directions, I learned from her how to make do.
Your mother was 45 when she died of cancer, and you went to college with her. In the sense that you went to college, you chose a college that was in your state, and they said, well, if you go, then anyone in your family can go. And your mother had always wanted to go to college.
Yeah, anyone in my family can go for free. So I was paying tuition, but my mother got to go to college for free. And it was something at first I resisted. Of course, I didn't want to go to college with my mom. Who does when they're a teenager? But I also knew that my mother had never had that opportunity. And she was a very creative and intellectually curious person who always wanted to be educated. And so I said, okay, you can do it. She commuted 3 hours each way to the college in St. Paul. It was called St. Thomas. And we just went there for 1 year, our freshman years. It really was not quite the right fit for me. So we transferred, each of us, to the University of Minnesota after that. And we went to different campuses, she in Duluth, me in the Twin Cities. And we had that college experience together. And it was actually in our senior year that she died. She died on the Monday of our spring break of our senior year of college. My mother was two classes shy of her bachelor's degree. I mean, I think it would always be awful to die at 45. It was a particularly awful moment because my mother was on the cusp of that next thing in her life, that part of her life that was going to be about her not just raising children, not that that's just a small thing, but it was going to be about her fulfilling her own dreams.
What did she want? What were those dreams?
My mother was a double major in history and women's studies, and she became very, very interested in American women's history in particular. And she wanted to go and get her PhD in history with a focus on, some of the early American experiences of women.
And obviously that colors you and your thoughts. And I've heard you say that you have felt that you were that you've been a feminist since you were a kid. And I assume a lot of that comes from your mother.
It comes from seeing my mother have the life that she had. My mom was a battered woman for the first years of my life when she was still married to my father. Then she was a single mom who worked as a waitress and in factories and had to really help, essentially provide for us on very little with very few resources. And then she was a woman who really was set about trying to fulfill those dreams that had been thwarted. I mean, of course she loved me and my siblings above anything, and we never doubted that. But I knew that running alongside of that was the fact that she'd had to put aside her dreams to raise us. And so I understood that really deeply and intuitively from the get-go.
When you think of the, as you mentioned, not only Wild, but then shortly after Wild comes out, there is a collection of columns, Tiny Beautiful Things, Advice on Love and Life from Dear Sugar. And so right before Wild comes out, it is revealed that you are Sugar.
That I'm Sugar. Yes. This column, it was this thing I took on really on a lark. And it ended up being one of the most fulfilling and serious things of my life. And really, some of my best writing is in that book. One of the things about the Dear Sugar column and Tiny Beautiful Things that people are always saying to me is, well, I didn't think I was going to want this book because I'm not interested in advice columns. But of course, they're really more literary essays. And that book becomes a sort of jigsaw puzzle of a memoir as well, because I tell so many stories from my own life in it. And this is what I'm talking about when I say you never know what that next book is going to be. Who knew that I would write a collection of advice columns one day? I certainly didn't. And so there is this great sense of exploration in those columns.
How long did you do? You're on hiatus now, but how long did you actively do it for?
I actively did it for 2 years. And for a lot of that time, more than 2 years, actually, about 2.5 years. And for a lot of that time, there was a new column going live every week. And I look back at that and think, how was I so productive? I would be cranking out these columns. And I think, have you read the book? They're not just a couple paragraphs, most of them. They're full-on essays. And so it really captured my interest in my heart. I was receiving these letters from strangers, and they were asking me all kinds of questions about their lives. It wasn't just a romance and advice column, though I do give advice in that direction. It's money, and it's parental relationships and family relationships and work relationships. And it just was so engaging and interesting to me. I went at it full throttle.
And yes, I mean, there's the advice aspect. That's ultimately what you have to dispense. But there's also the beauty of the writing.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The name of that book is Tiny Beautiful Things, Advice on Love and Life from Dear Sugar. Also, of course, Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail. The book is published by Vintage in paperback. Cheryl Strait, a great thrill. Thank you very much for spending time with us. A delight.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be here.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Our thanks also to the Woodstock Writers Festival in Woodstock, New York, where this edition of The Book Show was recorded. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.